everybody. This is Armand Demel with you at The Positive Mind here on the fabulous WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. Today we're going to talk about touch. Touche. You know, that's such a good word, touche. In fencing, it means touched. Touche. Well, yesterday, I specifically mentioned massage as a manipulation. I have been exposed to body manipulation of therapies, or the manipulation of somebody's body through a number of therapeutic different processes. Now, I remember I had Moshe Feldenkrais, a very, very famous man, was an old friend of mine, and he did work on me. He stretched every ligament of my body. He took every tendon and he pushed it aside, and he made me taller. It was a joke. He said, "Watch this." I remember being massaged, manipulated, pushed around, stones all over me. How many of you like massage? The other day I made an offhanded reference to some men who decide to have extramarital sexual relationships by going to massage parlors. And then I, of course, got a reaction. I got a reaction justifiably from Faith Schwartz, who called me up and said, "Hey, you're giving massage a bad name." Because it is not. That's one thing. That's a form of prostitution, where you go there and you get sexual services from a person touching your body under the guise of a massage parlor. And so I decided we'd do a little more research on this, because who do I have here? I got a top neurologist. Sherry Siegel is with us. She knows the human body. She knows about touch. She knows about the nerves and the tendons and everything else that goes in there. And I asked her, I said, "What about massage? And or what about touch? What about very much touch? You know what happens when you get older? Nobody touches you. You know what happens when you get in the wheelchair?" I went to visit my neighbor yesterday, a man I knew for many, many, many years who had gotten Alzheimer's. His name is Lou. Lou is my neighbor, and I remember Lou as a young man. I remember he was a very vibrant guy, but now he's got Alzheimer's, and he sits in a wheelchair because he can't stand, and he taps his head all day long. Just taps his head, tap, 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 tap. And I went to see his attendants, and I sat with Lou, and I held his hand. He stopped tapping. So I looked at the attendants and I said, what do you think this is? They said, "I don't know. He never stopped tapping." I said, "Well, did you ever hold his hand?" And they said, "No." I said, "Okay. Maybe he shouldn't stop tapping." What I actually did with Lou was I went next door and I got a pair of my bongo drums, which I had for sitting around for a long time, and I brought them back, and I had Lou tap on the bongo drums, and he had so much fun doing it that by the time I was leaving, now every night when I try to sleep, I hear the bongo drums next door instead of his tapping his head. But it was a beautiful thing. Lou needed to be touched, even if he was touching himself. And I think that's what some people do. Some people need to be touched, and they wind up touching themselves. One of the things we know about elders in senior care facilities, give them a dog, give them a cat, give them something reciprocal, you know? Because if you pet a cat, you get a sensation in your hands. Older people, people who stop getting touched because it's creepy to touch an older person is what young people say. But it's not creepy. It's just as beautiful as anything else. But they need touch. So if I had to give a gift to somebody I knew who was 85 years old and in a senior assisted living place, I would send them faith. Not in the form of religion, but in the form of Faith Schwartz. Faith, welcome to WBAI.
Thank you, Armand.
Oh, there you are. I'm sorry. Say it again.
Thank you, Armand.
Faith, you've been a part of WBAI for many years. You were a volunteer, right?
I've volunteered in the past.
And what did you do down there?
Just some technical things and learning how to engineer the old Flash Gordon style mixing board.
Oh,
way maybe, back at 505 8th Avenue.
505 8th, mm-hmm. which is where I was too. I remember it well.
Yeah.
Right, with Fred at the desk.
Oh, yeah, I was good friends with him. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He's a beautiful man.
Mm-hmm. He was.
Okay. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about massage, if you would, Faith. Okay. Tell me, give me your impression of it, because this is what you do.
Mm-hmm.
Let me hear it from you.
Okay, well, massage is using the hands to systematically relax or stimulate muscle tissue by kneading, stroking, by pressure. It's aided by stretching, by exercise. It increases circulation to injured areas. And it is important because it relieves people of all ages. And yes, you were right about what you said about the elderly. They do need to be touched, and they do have many pain-related illnesses. And it relieves people of all ages from pain, injury, stress, speeds recovery. It avoids re-injury by resetting our muscles and setting them right.
Some people like massage. Other people don't like massage.
Yes.
Right? And I'm saying it is not necessarily you must like massage. But you know what I would be curious about, Faith, and maybe you want to follow up on this.
Mm-hmm.
How about doing training in a senior assisted living facility mm-hmm. where you train them to massage each other?
I think that's a great idea, and it's something that I had where I live. They have a senior services center, and they refer some clients to me. Some of my clients are in their 90s and are living very well. And I thought of doing that, and I don't know what kind of response I would get. I've had little classes, question and answer classes about what massage is to explain and for outreach and for education.
What an interesting idea. Mm-hmm. So if anybody's interested in developing a curriculum of teaching massage to people in senior living or whatever we call them, right? Faith would be interested in it, and I would help her work on that. Just send me an email.
I did read something that the Massage Therapy Foundation, which exists, they did that with nursing assistants in senior citizens' homes, but that was for the CNAs to work on.
That was for the nursing assistants patients. To work mm-hmm. on it. Now, so massage, right? Mm-hmm. Massage, touch.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds wonderful. It sounds great. I know people who can't stand it. They say, keep your hands off me. Not because they're afraid of being touched, because it doesn't feel good. So for some people, it feels good. And for other people, it doesn't feel good. Sherry, let me ask you, as a neurologist, can you imagine scenarios where it feels good and doesn't feel good that doesn't involve pathology but just a matter of sensitivity and choice?
Some people have a high sensitivity to touch, and they don't enjoy being touched, the sensation of being touched. But I mostly think about pathology, neuropathy, for example, that people might get from diabetes.
What is neuropathy?
Neuropathy is when the nerves are broken, and so nerves can be affected by diabetes. People are familiar with that disease. Sometimes they'll get sensitivity in their feet. Sometimes it's so bad that it's burning, and they can't even stand the touch of a sheet on their feet at night when they go to sleep.
And what do? They build tents, right?
They build
a tent. I've seen these little tents.
That's exactly right. So it keeps the sheet away from their feet. They have a hard time wearing a bra sometimes if they've had a condition called postherpetic neuralgia. So after they have had the shingles, the blisters go away, but yet their nerves are not completely recovered. And so the skin where the shingles were is extremely sensitive. And some people can't wear a bra. Some people can't wear any clothing that touches their skin because it's
so
sensitive.
A little bit like being a burn victim. You know, you got your nerves are all kind of on fire.
Exactly.
Now do you, I guess you must be sensitive to different sensitivities, right, Faith?
What kind of
I mean, are you sensitive to when you go to massage someone, if someone asks you to massage them, they're either going to want deep tissue massage,
yes.
Hiku massage, Kadapi massage, mm-hmm. Swedish massage. How many names? Wait, let's just go over the names of massages that we know about. Now, not that we could break down every one, but where is that good list?
It looks like there are 29 types at
least. Okay, here they go.
Wikipedia.
Methods. You have acupressure. We know what that is, right? You push your thumbs in and you hold them in a spot. ANMA, A-N-M-A therapy. You have any idea what that is, Sherry?
Only from what I've seen on Wikipedia. And in Wikipedia, it says that it's a traditional Japanese massage involving kneading and deep tissue work.
Deep tissue work. So now there's a deep tissue work and there's a light tissue work. Is it true, Faith, that Swedish massage is more light than deep?
It is, by definition, and light and deep is relative, to depending on the client. You know, in other words, one person's deep tissue is somebody else's light tissue.
So if I were to say to somebody, give me a Swedish massage, I'm going to imagine that they're slowly, softly going over my body, putting little pressures in. I don't imagine they're taking their knuckles and bearing into my muscles and pressing on them real heavy, which I know certain people ask for.
Right. Swedish is really a circulatory massage.
Okay, circulate.
Going with the cardiovascular flow.
Do you ever get people, Faith, who really want you to hurt them?
Well, not. They want me to go deep to get, because they can't feel. You always go by the client's level of comfort.
Okay, now this is a very important question. They can't feel. Anosognosia. You know, you're not aware. So sometimes when you can't feel anything, you ask for pain. I know so many people who have gone numb in their lives, psychologically numb, neurologically numb, emotionally numb. And what do they want? They don't want to feel a nice breeze on their skin. They want to get a shot in the head with something. They want to be hit with something. They want to feel pain. Pain is a way of you knowing you're alive, because along with pain comes a little flash of endorphins. So when I was young, we had a thing called Rolfing. Have you ever heard of Rolfing?
Yes.
You want to describe Rolfing?
I can't give a dictionary definition of it, but I know it. It's very deep. It's now called structural integration.
Oh, really? They changed the name?
I believe so.
Ida Rolf, who developed this, believed that if you get into the certain centers, right, she would take her elbow, her knee, or her fist, and she would get so far in it that you would scream from the pain of it, and the end of it is you'd walk around in bliss. They would say that the Rolfing helped you reconnect. As many people say with acupuncture and so on and so forth, we're releasing your chi energy, you know, and maybe it was true, maybe it's not true, but pain is one of the great potential rewards of massage when the pain is followed by endorphins and pleasure. Does that make sense, Sherry?
Well, I think the body, when it's in pain, releases the endorphins to counteract the pain.
Yeah, and endorphins feel good, right?
And endorphins make you feel good temporarily.
Sherry?
Well, there is, when somebody has a knot that you're working on, say, you know, in the shoulder, and you're working on it, people say it's a good pain. In other words, they're getting a relief out of it because you have to feel a little something to work through it, you know. And
do you know those knots? Do you really work through those knots? Do you actually get a knot, and then when you massage it, the knot goes away?
Yes, it can be so. You know, it can be over a period of time. Sometimes it's, you know, released. It's by degrees, depending on how long
the
therapy.
I've seen people who have those knots, and they go for massage. Mm-hmm. And the knot's a little better, which means they've gotten enough endorphins from the pain that's been put in there that they're not really aware of it. But are you saying that when a person has a knot in their muscles, because that's in the muscles, right, Sherry?
Mm-hmm, it is.
It can be released by direct pressure to it?
Yes.
Now, neurologically, does that make sense?
Sure. If there's a muscle contraction, it'll feel like a lump in the skin sometimes.
Yeah.
And if the skin, if that area is massaged,
you bring blood to it.
You bring blood to it, and the muscle itself may just relax.
Huh. This is Armand DeMille. I love learning. Don't you love learning? We're now learning from Faith Schwartz, who is a licensed massage therapist, and Sherry Siegel, who is a licensed everything. Hey, more forms of it. Ayurvedic massage, Balinese massage, barefoot deep tissue. I remember I went to Sedona. No, I was in there somewhere out there in Arizona. And they said, what kind of massage would you want? They had water therapy massage, which was kind of remarkable. Under the water, they massage you. That's kind of like birthing, you know? And they have Bowen therapy, Brema, Chapissage, deep tissue massage, my favorite, Hilo massage. What's Hilo massage? You knew that one, Sherry.
I believe that's where they use hot stones, and it's used it's a Filipino form of massage, which uses different techniques, and also attends to the stressed muscles.
I like hot stones. What about them?
I've done hot stone massage, but I've never heard the term Hilo, so it might be just particular to the
Hilo, yeah. Yeah, and then there's medical massage. What would medical massage be?
Well, for example, I might give a prescription to a patient who has an injury or may have a migraine, may have cervical spine pain due to strained muscles. And so I might recommend a medical massage for them because it's a non-invasive way, potentially non-invasive way, to help the pain.
Where would they get this medical massage? Would they go to a regular licensed massage therapist, or would they go to a medical massage therapist?
A licensed massage therapist
would know what medical massage is.
Most would. I mean, you know, some may not have that particularly as their specialty, but it's mostly focused, usually deep tissue work, on an area that you're working on. It's usually shorter. They do it a lot in pain management clinics, the rehabilitation places, physical therapy centers, integrative health centers.
Just curiously, do you know what Russian massage is? Do you have any idea? You have it in your list of massages?
It's in the list from Wikipedia.
I have never heard of it. I know there's trigger point therapy, visceral manipulation, Watsu. Is Watsu the water one?
Yes, it's Shiatsu, under the water. And there's practitioners in the city that do that in the
They
pools.
Do Watsu?
Mm-hmm.
I like that.
Armand, it says that Russian massage has three phases. The first phase is gentle, slow, and mild. The second is hard, deep, and fast. And the third phase is similar to the first phase, which is slow and gentle.
It sounds like sex. this is Russian.
Well, they do say that they apply honey.
And they apply honey, which is a standard. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. You know, has massage been around a long time, Sherry?
You can probably answer that.
I think from my readings, they found that in a doctor's tomb in Egypt in 2300 B.C.
2300 B.C.?
Mm-hmm. They found paintings of medical manipulation, and it was a very respected medical practice.
Huh.
But with the advent of pharmaceuticals and technology, people got more divorced from that idea.
That would make sense. It would be pretty easy to find out. You know, you go along and somebody says, oh, my shoulder's killing you, and you put your hand on your shoulder and you rub it a little bit, and they say, oh, that feels good. Hey, well, that feels good. Why don't we make a business out of this? We'll call it massage. You know, good idea.
And there's osteopathy, the doctors of osteopathy and chiropractic.
Well, let's talk about osteopathy. You know, I used to work at the Texas College of Osteopathic Medicine, TCOM, quite an interesting place. What is osteopathy as opposed to it's bones? It's really about osteopathic medicine. And they know a great deal about medicine, but they also know a lot about body manipulation. And let's not skip, of course, my favorite of all, which is called naprapathy. Naprapathy. It's a field. The first naprapath was Oakley Smith. And it says the following. The cause of imbalances. He discovered that structural imbalances, often situated in the spine, were sources of pain which can build slowly and spread throughout the body. The cause of such imbalance, he said, which depletes the suppleness of connective tissue, includes poor posture, trauma, whiplash, general wear. Naprapathy teaches that over time the resulting stiffness can produce pinched nerves. These trigger or contribute to chronic conditions like arthritis, migraine, carpal tunnel, fibromyalgia, sciatica, and so on and so forth. So in naprapathy, treatment begins with a medical case history and a spinal exam, and then It includes manual manipulation designed to stretch the specific connective tissue. Now, let's talk about that. Why do you want to stretch connective tissue?
Sometimes in there are medical and neurological conditions called spasticity, for example. What can happen is that the tendons and ligaments actually contract. And sometimes you might need to stretch them, and some forms of physical therapy can help those ligaments and tendons stretch.
Runners know about that. You know, they're always stretching, right? Yes. They're always pulling that apart.
Mm-hmm.
Do you work directly on stretching?
I do incorporate stretching into my massages.
Now, when you incorporate stretching into massages, mm-hmm. people think of stretching as something you do to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You stretch.
Yes.
Can you stretch somebody?
Yes, it's called passive stretching. And when the body is more relaxed, it stretches farther if somebody else does it. So when you're totally
relaxed. Now there's, you know, talk about all the massages I've ever mm-hmm. received. Passive stretching mm-hmm. was my favorite.
Mm-hmm.
I just love somebody pulling me apart. You know, they were just kind of going beyond me, and it just kind of, I felt that as opposed to me doing it.
Mm-hmm.
It felt much better because I was in a quieter place. I wonder if you could request that. Give me passive stretching, you know? You would do it.
Part of sports massage therapists will do that. It's a lot of that.
Mm-hmm. When I was studying Alexander Technique and Feldenkrais and Ilana Rubenfeld, who was a dear old friend of mine, who would teach the Rubenfeld Synergy Method, a kind of idea came up. It was really kind of an interesting idea, Faith. They said that we look at your body first for balance. Now, when I see clients for the first time, I'm generally part of what I look at. You know, the doctors look at, they have a number of clues you get from patients when you see them, the color of their skin, the way that they're breathing, how they're holding their posture and things like that. I'm always interested in the balance of their body. More than once, I will ask a person to just stand in front of me, and I'm looking at balance. Now here, according to the methods that I learned, when a person is out of balance, they usually have one side that's strong and one side that's weak. Sherry talked about how in some therapies, if you have a strong right side and a weak left side, they'll have you tie your right side behind your back so that you use only your left side so that it will develop muscle. That makes sense. In the process that I was taught, what you do is not strengthen. This is doing body work now. This mm-hmm. is body work on a person. You do not strengthen the weak side, but you weaken the strong side so that it goes into harmony with the other side of the body. Did you ever hear of such a thing, Faith?
No,
Isn't that fascinating?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
It's fascinating. We always think about, oh, you got one strong side and one weak side. Let's make the weak side strong. But in this theory, they said, no, make the strong side weak. Now, when I think about that, almost as a cultural statement. We got a warlike group and we have a passive group. What are we going to do? Let's make it equal. We'll make the passive group warlike. No, let's make the warlike group passive. Let's find a balance that way. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We're talking about body manipulation, touching, and touching in therapy. Sherry, as a neurologist, you touch your patients?
I do when I do the exam.
Do you touch them in passing? Do you put your hand on their shoulder?
I do. In fact, I do that with my friends, too.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, as part of your therapeutic method.
I would say that I make an effort to shake hands, to say hello. If someone needs comforting, I might touch their shoulder. Some people prefer not to be touched, and I do my best to...
How do you know that? How do you get that signal?
I have to be blunt, and I just ask the question, are you comfortable with me touching you or giving you a hug?
I remember once that somebody came to me for an interview, and I went to shake her hand, and it was a religious Jewish woman mm-hmm. who said, no, I'm from. And I, you know what we're mm-hmm. talking about?
Yes.
And I said, I thought of Eric Fromm, you know, the psychologist, and I didn't know if that meant a school of therapy. What do I know? I'm an Italian kid, right? And then she explained to me, what was it, Faith?
Just that certain cultural groups within the Jewish community, and sure, other religions, won't get touched by, are not allowed to be touched by a member of the opposite sex. So touch is also cultural.
Nobody else can touch me. I also find with certain psychological groups that there are people who walk a very thin line between, I'm going to say sanity and insanity, but I really don't mean it as coarsely, as strongly as that, but between feeling okay and feeling disorganized. You know, they have this fine line. They're just barely holding themselves together. Did you ever get that feeling? You wake up in the morning and you say, how am I going to get to work today? And you're barely on the edge. You know, the wrong thing, if the wrong thing happened to you, if somebody bumps into you, you could lose it for the whole day. But if you, so everything is okay, you eventually get to a point where you balance yourself out. Well, some people, when they're at this point, when they're at this point in between, you can't introduce any variable that may be invasive. So I have learned not even to shake a hand if I believe that to be true about a person. However, most people who I see, if it's okay with them, I hug them. But it must be okay with them, so I ask permission. And most people feel really responsive to it, because when I hug with a kind of a fatherly, it's an okay thing, we're in it together. I mostly like to hug men. What's interesting about hugging a man is most men are afraid to feel anything from another man. I'm not only talking about homophobia, I'm talking about the way they were brought up. So if I'm working with somebody and I diagnose somebody and I see a guy's got trouble being a man, I understand. When I hug him, if he can't handle it, I know this man had no loving father and that I know exactly how to help this guy.
And Armand, is it cultural? Do you find that European men are more open to being touched?
Interesting question. Interesting question. I find it, you know where I find it more? On the social strata, I find it more people who are upper class have more difficulty than people who are lower class, whatever that means. If you grow up in a family where everything is proper, don't hug, don't cry, don't be a sissy. You hug somebody, you pat them on the shoulder while you're hugging them. One other thing I'm going to say before we take a short break, there are three ways to touch a person, which are very important. Not massage ways, but when you put your hand on somebody's body, especially when they have an anxiety attack or something like that, put your hand on their body in a steady way. Don't put too much pressure. Don't put too little pressure. Make sure that every inch of the skin of your palm is covered when you're touching them, and put a light hand on them and hold it there. But just hold it steady. It makes a person feel grounded. Do not rub. The biggest mistake that people make with other people when they hold them or shake them or touch them is they shake it. They rub their hands on them. You know, it's like you rub them as if it's going to make them feel good, like you're going to stimulate them. Most people who are having panic attacks have too much stuff already. There's too much circulation. They want to feel solid. So what you want to do is put a hand with someone and just lay your hand on them. Always with their permission, of course. Always. And I think when it's a man hugging a woman, he's got to be real, real careful about not crossing boundaries, because that's got to be ultra permissive. You know what I mean? This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. We are going to take a short break, and when we come back, I'm going to play you some very tender music, and then we'll continue with our discussion. We'll be right back.
Only two things scare me, and one is nuclear war.
What's the other?
Excuse me?
What's the other thing that scares you?
Hi, this is Jamie.
Hi, this is Sarah from Brand Van 3000, and you're listening to
WBAI 99.5 FM.
New York?
New York.
See how relaxed you're getting?
Indeed.
TalkBack is your gathering place for the free and fair exchange of information and ideas heard here Monday through Thursday from 3 until 5 in the afternoon. I'm Hugh Hamilton. Join me as we explore the issues and events making news across the nation and around the world with expert guests, insightful analysis,
and by our mind. Here we go.
Questions and observations.
5 seconds.
That's TalkBack right here on WBAI New York.
Ready? Go.
You ask me if I love you, and I choke on my reply. I'd rather hurt you honestly than mislead you with a lie. And who am I to judge you on what you say or do? I'm only just beginning to see the real you. And sometimes when we touch, the honesty's too much, and I have to close my eyes and hide. I wanna hold you till I die, till we both break down and cry. I wanna hold you till the fear in me subsides. Romance and all its strategy leaves me battling with my pride. But through the insecurity, some tenderness survives. I'm just enough. Hesitant prize fighter, still trapped within my youth. And sometimes when we touch, the honesty's too much, and I have to close my eyes and hide. I wanna hold you till I die, till we both break down and cry. I wanna hold you till the fear in me subsides. At times I'd like to break you and drive you to your knees. At times I'd like to break through and hold you in. I understand you, and I know how hard you try. I've watched while love commands you, and I've watched love pass you by. At times I think we're drifters, still searching for a friend, a brother or a sister, but then the passion flares again. The honesty's too much, and I have to close my eyes and hide. I wanna hold you till I die, till we both break down and cry. I wanna hold you till the fear in me subsides.
This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind, Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays here on WBAI. Dan Hill, just in case you didn't recognize the voice. We're in the studio today with Faith Schwartz and Sherry Siegel. We're talking about touch and massage. Okay, now let's get down to the good stuff. We may even take some of your calls today. Faith, is there ever a time that you think a person should not go for a massage? Or do you think that massage may be slightly counterindicated? Yes. When would you caution somebody? When would you say to a patient who comes to you, here they come to you and say, take my money and touch me. And you say, uh-uh.
Well, no, if they, there's a number of different reasons. But, for instance, if you have something like deep vein thrombosis, a massage therapist could avoid that area or know how to do a massage.
Now, a deep vein thrombosis is you look at blue veins popping out of the skin. Is that it, Sherry?
A thrombosis is a blockage, usually because of a blood clot. And so in the deep veins, versus the veins that you see on the surface of your skin, the deep veins take the blood to places where it can block other organs and block air supply and blood supply to different places.
So you got to avoid deep veins. And is that what you're saying?
If they're thrombosed. I mean, if your circulation is normal, your deep veins are doing what they need to do. But if there's a thrombosis, sometimes you can cause a piece of the thrombus, which is the clot, to go floating off upstream.
Huh.
Well, it's also the style of massage that you would do to take fluids away from that area. And you would do this with something like that.
You would try to do a massage that takes the fluids away from the area rather than attacking the area directly.
Right.
So when you're thrombed, you just gave me a new verb, right? When you said when you're thrombed.
Thrombosed.
Thrombosed. When you're thrombosed, what would a thrombosed personality be like? Somebody who's got a clot in their head?
Well, we think
somebody
of,
who's just kind of filled with themselves.
We think of a deep vein thrombosis is usually happening in the legs of lower extremities. So I've never thought about a thrombosed personality.
There must be. We could invent it.
Well, let's invent it.
Let's invent it. A thrombosed personality is a personality who is just kind of all filled with themselves and they can't get out of their own way. And
They're blocked.
Okay, when else might you not?
Bleeding disorders, taking blood thinners, and damaged blood vessels.
A lot of people are told by their doctors to take blood thinners for more reasons, I think, than are truly necessary. You know, I mean, Coumadin, Warfarin, they just feel really good. Take Coumadin. They tell it to you. Doctors, I've seen so many recommend it, and I've refused it so many times myself. Oh, you should take a blood thinner. Get out of here, you know? Take a baby aspirin, do whatever it is. But now these things thin your blood. That's how rat poison is made out of Coumadin, you know. It's made out of thin the blood of the rat if you're going to kill it. So if you take Coumadin and you massage a person, what's the danger in that?
Well, if they're more likely to bleed or if their bleeding time is prolonged, and the therapist goes very deep, for example, they might actually cause a contusion or an ecchymosis, we call it in medicine.
Oh,
it's a black
God.
And blue mark.
Two more words. Ecchymosis is black and blue?
Yes, it is. But if it's there, if someone's on a blood thinner, it can be more than just something surface. It can be deep, and it can actually cause a significant amount of bleeding under the skin, which can cause a lot of problems.
That time that a guy gave me, remember you walked in and you saw my arm was all black and blue because somebody had given me a blood test, but they missed and they did it badly?
Mm-hmm.
Was that an ecchymosis?
It sure was. And that happens because the needle can pierce the blood vessel, and then instead of the blood going into the needle and into the bottle to take the sample, it goes under the skin. It leaks out.
I should have written him a letter. You ecchymosed me.
Lawsuit.
All right.
So again, with all of these, just check with your doctor if you are taking a blood thinner. It may be. You may be still be able to get a massage. You could get a shamp massage, like you said before, a scalp massage. People do want to go for a massage to get a good night's sleep, to get de-stressed. So some other areas of massage.
Why is foot massage so magical? It is magical. You know what I mean? I mean, I could, mm-hmm. as a recipient mm-hmm. and as a giver, I have never seen more magic than a foot massage. Mm-hmm. You have any idea why?
It has the most nerve endings. We have the most nerve endings in our feet and our hands, and we feel with our feet. We're on our feet all day long, most of us, many of us, and even if we're not, we want them to feel activated because we are moving creatures. Movement is good for us, and it also is the return path. You know, it pumps the blood back into the body.
How about reflexology? Isn't that done on the feet?
Yes, it is, as well as on the hands and the ears.
And that's the assumption that there are specific available outside points on your body, like trigger points, that if you touch them, they're connected to the inner organs.
Yes.
That's what reflexology assumes, right?
Yes. Although trigger points are really something else.
And trigger points are something else, right? Right. But it's the reflexology says I could take care of your lung by massaging your foot.
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. You understand that, Jerry?
That's the theory.
That's the theory.
I gave somebody a ear massage, and I pressed on the lung point, and she took a deep breath. She was asthmatic. She said afterwards, it's the biggest breath I've taken.
No.
She did. She was very relaxed. This was after a whole massage, and with that.
You can't just go up to somebody's ear and do
that.
If that were possible, I'm sure the breath today I was going to tell you, come over here and do my ear, and let's see what happens. We'll have it demonstrated on you.
Let's try it.
All right, come on over. Here you go. Right ear. Here we go. We are under the guidance of a doctor. Come on over.
This was a whole, after a whole session as well. So.
All right. So now I remember Moshe Feldenkrais. I challenged him once. Just like I said, okay, come on over and do that to me. And he said, okay, I'll do it. It cost you $300 an hour. I said, I made a deal with you, Moshe. I said, how long will it take you to get my body straightened out? He said, 5 sessions. I said, that would be $1,500. I'll make you a deal. If it works, I'll give you $3,000. If it doesn't work, I give you nothing. He said, let's not do it.
He wasn't a betting man.
You can't be too sure. So people's contact and people's touch, and yeah, I mean, it's just so rough. You know, we as shrinks have been warned by our license never to touch people. We as psychologists, I have seen psychologists, you go over and you go to shake their hands and they nod their heads because they're afraid to touch you. They're afraid of getting accused of something. And we've taken the medical profession and we've kind of removed you from touching people, even your dentist. I remember my dentist was once looking for a sharp edge on my tooth. I said, there's a sharp edge on my tooth. I could feel it with my tongue. So she at the time, my doctor at the time was a woman, she had gloves on. So she went and said, I don't feel it. I said, but it's right there. She said, I don't feel it. I said, well, Rosemary, take off your gloves. You know, this is the first time she was using gloves because it was following the AIDS scares. I said, take off your gloves. How could you feel my teeth? And she said, you know, Armand, she said, I'll only do this for you. And I felt like we were having some wild, crazy thing go on. Because all I wanted her to do was take off her gloves to touch my tooth. You know, do you wear gloves, Sherry, when you shake a patient's hands?
Not when I shake hands, but if I were to do something in a patient's mouth, I certainly would use gloves.
Yeah. We get so scared. We've been frightened into not touching each other anymore. You know, bad enough as it is. Okay, other massage dangers that they talk about. I want to talk about the cancer, this theory about cancer. I remember Wilhelm Reich, who was a psychiatrist, psychologist, who did a lot of with energy studies in Canada. And he said, never do energetic Reichian muscle release with people who have cancer. He said it releases the cancer and empowers it. Now, that could have just been an amateurish theory. What do you guys think about massage and cancer?
Well, there is a whole practice of oncology massage that takes care of cancer patients. And it goes against the lymphatic flow, so it's not increasing respiration any more than normal. I know that Sloan Kettering has a whole clinic devoted to alternative care, and they have a lot of massage therapy there. It's also important for people to get touched when they have cancer. Just like you say, the elderly people don't get touched. People with cancer, they don't get touched, even by their family members. They get scared off. So it's very important for them to continue to feel contact and feel normalcy in the world.
Part of the, you know, I hate double beds. I hate king size beds. I think king size beds are one of the big mistakes to marriages. You get a king size bed, you know, and here's the disadvantage of a king size bed. You can now roll to the other side and not disturb your partner if you want to read, jump around, or whatever you want to do. The mistake is, the bed is supposed to be the place you touch. I believe that more takes place in the slightest skin-to-skin contact in a bed between a couple, more than sex, more than anything else. You bond in some way transdermally. Thermally? Dermally. Dermally. Right? Mm-hmm. You do. Something happens in there. So I think touch is real important, and I think the trouble with king-size beds is it tends to send the couple separate. I think this other thing that's been taking place lately, since people have bought homes bigger than they need, which is the new disease. People say, give me a bigger house and a bigger house and a bigger house. And now they have guest rooms. And now the husband is snoring, so the wife goes to the guest room and sleeps in the guest room. And they do this as a convenience. A mistake. Find out how to deal with the snoring, find out how to live with it, find out how to stay there, but do not leave your bedroom if you're in love with somebody and you want to keep that love going, because the absence of touch will eventually remove you emotionally from your partner. You know?
Yes.
What do you think?
I think that's true, and I think that people need their sleep, and when the snoring is very severe, sometimes it's a medical disorder. Sometimes disorders like narcolepsy and sleep apnea can cause snoring, and so sometimes it's a medical problem.
Okay, so the answer is not go to the guest room. The answer is take care of the problem. We're showing you a problem. If you're snoring so much that it's waking your wife up. Well, I tell you something. Did you ever hear yourself snore? Have you ever heard yourself snore?
I never have.
Do you think you snore?
I don't think I do.
Do you think you snore?
No, I don't think I snore now. I've been told in the past I do.
Then that means you've slept with somebody. Okay, anyway. I feel like a 10-year-old kid.
We all come from families.
Right. Okay, no. Here it is now. So I was once accused of vicious snoring, all right? And I said, this is not true, because I know I don't snore because I don't hear myself snore. And I put on one of these voice-activated tape recorders. And so I went to sleep. And then when I woke up, I saw the tape recorder and I replayed what I heard. I heard the most god-awful sound I ever heard in my life. I heard something that sounded like a truck going through a subway. It was horrendous. I was convinced I have to pay attention to this. But it's funny how you don't know you snore. It's like, what did nature do to us to tell us that we didn't do it? Okay, back to touch.
Right, and I did want to add something about cancer massage. Sometimes when the cancer metastasizes or goes to the bones themselves become weak, and sometimes massage therapists, if they use a lot of force, mm-hmm. can actually cause a fracture. But as you say, Faith, massage therapists are taught how to massage somebody with cancer.
Those with oncology massage training, yes, cancer massage training.
Right, and it's very important. It's a good alternative method, complementary method, to help pain and discomfort that's non-medical.
Right. How about the idea of using massage as pain relief, Sherry? How do you like that? That you're going to do it now, and we're going to, through the massage, we're going to get somebody to, whether it's endorphins, dopamine, serotonin, whatever else is going to come out. I am sure neurotransmitters, do we know anything about neurotransmitters being activated through massage? Do you, Faith? Do you know it at that level? Which neurotransmitters would serotonin be increased with massage?
My guess is that the endorphins are released.
That's for sure.
And because you have local endorphins being released, sometimes if there is muscle spasm, for example, the muscles can relax and you can get a temporary relief from your pain.
And what about neurotransmitters? What do you think?
Well, I think when you have less painful stimulation in the part of your body that hurts, your brain relaxes. And so your neurotransmitters, my guess is also serotonin would be more increased, but really I don't know the research to talk about that.
We should check that out, because serotonin is a big player in our life, and we have a program coming up soon where we are going to talk about the dopaminergic mind. Oh my gosh, we've been focusing on the wrong thing. We found a man named Dr. Fred Previck, in Texas, who has been working on dopaminergic minds and the different manifestations thereof, and we'll be interviewing him on our program soon. Massage has also been used to reduce state anxiety, which is, state anxiety is a transient amount of anxiety at the moment. It's also been known to reduce blood pressure and heart rate at temporary effects. In general, we're saying if you're not completely a nudnik and you're a practitioner of massage and you're well-intended, you can practice this and it's going to be to the benefit of people. Now, can I ask you something, Faith? How did you wind up in this field?
I always liked it, and I've always done yoga, so I like stretching, you know, and it always felt good, and I was always aware, had this body awareness, and I started into it and got the training, and I started with reflexology because, like you said, I was wondering, why does the feet feel so good? And I finally wanted to get some instruction as to find out why.
So is it a nice thing? You get these smelly bodies, you get people laying under a sheet, you know? Why do you have to have the sheet over you when you get a massage? What's the story? Outside of the chill, what is this thing about seeing a naked body? Are you supposed to not view a person's naked butt if you're massaging them, but you're allowed to touch their butt muscles?
Well, you want to have draping for comfort of the client. And first of all, you know, people usually don't smell. you want to drape people so that you have a boundary. I mean, you can also be clothed during the massage. You disrobe to your level of comfort, and you also have a sheet.
So let me understand it. You want to have a boundary to indicate to the person, look, your clothes are not off, you're not naked?
Well, or if they are disrobed, because you do have to access skin areas,
right.
you just undrape the area that you're working on. It's a trust thing. It builds trust to say, look, I'm just doing this.
But what
now
if it's your
this.
Sister?
Well, then
would
still,
you do that with your sister still?
Well, yes, probably, knowing my sister, but somebody else's sister, maybe not.
Maybe not, right. Sherry, when you're working with patients and you have that whole clothing thing and you're doing an examination, even though neurological doesn't get down to as much nudity as, you know, other forms, you feel that way about protecting people's image of themselves or wearing clothing or what? What if a person says, I'm a nudist, examine me?
Well, most often it's a person's comfort zone, and there's a certain professional distance that we keep, and we do that by clothing, we do that by desks sometimes, and so maintaining that distance until, as you said, Faith, until the trust is built up, and then I think sometimes if you need to examine an area when you trust that the person is doing the right thing and won't hurt you, that's one thing when someone comes to you for a neurological problem or when they need a massage because of tight muscles, sometimes they're in pain and they fear that if you touch them, you're going to hurt them. So this is, I agree, it's a way to maintain a distance until the trust is built. And most people don't necessarily feel comfortable getting undressed as well, so it's a matter of respect.
This is Armand DeMille with you with the Positive Mind. I thank you both very much because I think this is very important. Faith, I didn't think we were going to go the whole time, but look, you've been a great guest, and thank you for sending me the letter, and thank you for your help with WBAI. If people wanted to contact you, how would they find you?
Well, they can go through my email. My website isn't totally up yet, so it's Faith Schwa, S-C-H-W-A, @gmail.com.
Faith Schwa @gmail.com. Thank you, Faith. I'm going to take you up on that ear massage. I want to find out about the breathing. That could be a great asset to everybody at WBAI. Sherry Siegel, thank you also. We once again wind up finding something and doing the amazing. Okay? I will be back with you, my friends, tomorrow at 2 p.m., at 1 p.m., with more very, very exciting stuff. Send me an email. Go to the website, thepositivemind.com, and send me an email, which you can find out how to do on that thing. Just to let me know how you like this stuff. Be back with you tomorrow at 1:00.